On this day, we stood here together and we fought for our rights in Hungary.
I feel incredibly proud to say that I am a gay man and also an Olympic champion.
Move from the homosexual injunction in chapter 18 of Leviticus to chapter 19 in Leviticus, which says, Va'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that you should love your neighbor as yourself.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Ghana lawmakers draft draconian anti-queer bill. Diver Daly's gold makes a splash for LGBTQ Olympians and turning over the texts of Jewish tradition. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 31st, 2021. The most homophobic document the world has ever seen. That's what LGBTQ people and their allies in Ghana are calling a draft of the Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill. It would punish anyone for simply being LGBTQ to 5 years in prison. Anyone who advocates for LGBTQ people could be sentenced to 10 years. It also bans online platforms and media companies from posting or running any messages in support of LGBTQ people. Same-gender sex is already against the law in Ghana, currently punishable with up to 3 years in prison. Just ahead of the filing of the bill, Speaker of Parliament Alban Babi declared the LGBT plus pandemic in the West African nation to be worse than COVID-19. Danny Bediako of the queer advocacy group Rightify Ghana called the proposal a homophobe's dream law. He told Reuters that people are even scared to go out now, and some members say they will leave the country if the bill is passed into law. Even those who want to help us will be afraid. Wendy Isaac of Human Rights Watch explained to the Washington Post, it criminalizes everything, from being a person who engages in same-sex conduct to identifying as a transgender person to being an ally of LGBTQ individuals. People are absolutely terrified. Before the introduction of the draconian bill, there was the recent forced shuttering of a fledgling queer rights group. Escalating raids on queer venues have followed, netting multiple arrests on trumped-up charges. A timetable for debate and a vote on the bill has not been announced. Reportedly, it has major support in Parliament, especially among members of President Nana Akufo-Addo's ruling New Patriotic Party.
Bold defiance against Hungary's mushrooming homophobia was on the march in Budapest's annual LGBTQ Pride Parade. Crowd estimates exceeding 30,000 on July 24th far eclipsed previous attendance records. The throngs were reacting to the recent no-promo-homo law pushed through Parliament by Prime Minister Viktor Orban. It outlaws any support of representation of LGBTQ people in schools or on television. Its inclusion in a measure against pedophilia gave lawmakers little choice in voting for it. Politico described the mostly youthful marchers as festive, despite the attempted repression. Signs mocking Orban and his Fidesz political party mixed with rainbow flags. More rainbows adorned balconies on buildings along the parade route. Several members of the European Parliament joined the march. Rabble-rousing remarks by an unidentified Pride participant were posted on the New York Times website.
I cannot tell you how long it is going to take until we have full equality in our societies, also here in Hungary. But I can tell you one thing. There will be a moment in your life. In this moment, you will look back to us standing here together on this square. And no matter how difficult the situation will be, no matter how grim the times will look, you are going to look back and you will remember that at least on this day, we stood here together and we fought. We fought for our rights, we fought for democracy, we fought for rule of law, we fought for our freedom, and we fought for dignity.
Prime Minister Orban has countered sanctions threatened by the EU with a public vote on the new law, although no date for the referendum has been announced. Orban is up for re-election in April.
In neighboring Poland, four activists are being sued for publishing an interactive map of more than 100 local governments in the country that have declared themselves to be LGBT-free zones. The color-coded Atlas of Hate identifies three categories. Green areas have rejected LGBT-free zone proposals. Amber areas designate anti-queer lobbying by far-right activists. Red areas are official LGBT-free zones. Jakub Gafron, Kamil Matsuga, Paulina Pajonk, and Paweł Preneta are the co-creators of the Atlas of Hate. They're being sued for slander by local politicians in six red LGBT-free zones. The volunteers face aggregate fines topping the equivalent of $43,000. One news outlet says that's more than the combined day job salaries of all four of them. The activists are getting legal and financial support from a number of human rights groups, including Poland's Campaign Against Homophobia and the global advocacy group All Out.
A Christian web designer who refuses to create queer wedding websites saw her appeal thrown out this week. A three-judge panel of the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals voted 2-1. Lower courts have found that Lori Smith's refusal of service violated Colorado's laws that ban anti-LGBTQ discrimination. The issue has never actually come up in her business, but Smith cites her religious beliefs. She's represented by the far-right legal group Alliance Defending Freedom, which also defended the faith-based bigotry of Masterpiece cake shop owner Jack Phillips. The Alliance says it will appeal this week's decision against Smith.
The policies of the Virginia Department of Education for transgender student accommodations have survived a legal test. Lynchburg Circuit Court Judge J. Frederick Watson dismissed a challenge this week to the department's plans for the coming school year. It was filed by some parents represented by the Christian Action Network with the backing of other religious right groups. Under the policies, trans students are allowed to use the campus bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their gender identity. They should also have their preferred gender pronouns and names respected. The plaintiffs claimed that the policies violate their First Amendment freedom of speech and religion rights. Equality Virginia and the ACLU of Virginia were among more than 50 advocacy groups that filed friend of the court briefs, encouraging its rejection of the case. The Education Department's trans student policies have no enforcement provisions, however, according to the Virginia pilot. So the start of the new school year looms while the fight continues with officials at the local school board level debating how to implement the policies, or if they will.
Once upon a time, the advocacy group Out Nebraska scheduled a drag queen story hour. The private after-hours event at the Lincoln Children's Museum was scheduled for July 24th with about 50 attendees expected. But the museum announced the cancellation of the event on Instagram on July 19th, explaining that over the past few days, the Lincoln Children's Museum and event host Out Nebraska have both received an overwhelming number of threats of violence against our organizations, many going so far as death threats. Both groups agreed to the cancellation after consulting with police officials. Officer Luke Bonkiewicz refused to provide details about the threats or how they were made, whether in social media posts, email messages, or phone calls. He did say that there was genuine concern for the safety and well-being of potential attendees and that the threats were being investigated. As of July 27th, the Lincoln Journal Star reported that there had been no arrests.
The Florida-based Coral Ridge Ministries is an anti-LGBTQ hate group. Calling them one is not defamation. This week, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a lower court's dismissal of a lawsuit filed by the megachurch, also known as D. James Kennedy Ministries. The plaintiffs demanded damages from the Southern Poverty Law Center for their hate group designation, which made them ineligible for charitable Amazon Smile donations. A unanimous three-judge panel decided that the progressive watchdog group's action did not involve actual malice, and that Coral Ridge et al. Had failed to make a convincing argument to support their case. A Southern Poverty Law Center press release said that the fact that Coral Ridge claims its statements about the LGBT community are biblically based doesn't immunize it from criticism. We have a First Amendment right to express our opinions, just as Coral Ridge has a right to express its opinions.
Finally,
all
Green invite Grandma to her wedding? Grandma is former beauty queen and pop singer Anita Bryant. In the late 1970s, Bryant led a campaign in Florida to allegedly save our children from being recruited into the homosexual lifestyle. Her holy crusade went national, essentially launching the religious rights attack on LGBTQ rights in the United States that continues to this day. So, what should Anita Bryant's granddaughter do about her upcoming wedding? She told an episode of the Slate podcast, One Year, that she probably will eventually just call her and ask if she even wants an invitation, because I don't know if she would be offended if I didn't invite her. She said that Bryant once told her to have faith that the right man would come along. That's not how it turned out. Sarah Green's fiancé is a woman.
So welcome to my little corner of the world.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 31st, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
Here we are in a time where we feel we're really stepping forward in terms of addressing gender diversity, but in the Talmud, there are actually six genders.
We'll explore old Jewish texts to find out what's new again later in the program.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few. I've had my share of bad kicks in my face, but I've come through.
No need to go
on.
If all the out athletes competing in the Tokyo Olympics were representing Queer Nation as a country, they'd be ranking 7th overall in the medal count as of August 1st, according to Outsports. The LGBTQ participants have collected 6 gold medals, 7 silver, and 6 bronze. Shot putter Raven Saunders also scored the most prominent protest at the Games. The Team USA silver medalist crossed her arms over her head on the podium, signifying an X for intersectionality. Notable firsts include trans official Kimberly Daniels and trans NB soccer player Quinn, both from Canada. At a press conference celebrating his first gold medal, Team Britain's 4-time Olympic diver Tom Daley had this to say.
I came out in 2013, December 2013, and when I was younger, I always felt like the one that was alone and different and didn't fit in, and wasn't. There was something about me that was always never going to be as good as what society wanted me to be, and I hope that any young LGBT person out there can see that no matter how alone you feel right now, you are not alone, and that you can achieve anything. And there is a whole lot of your chosen family out here ready to support you. And I feel incredibly proud to say that I am a gay man and also an Olympic champion. And I feel very empowered by that because, you know, when I was younger, I thought that I was never going to be anything or achieve anything because of who I was. And to be an Olympic champion now just shows that you can achieve anything.
British diver Tom Daley won gold in the 10-meter synchronized platform event. When he competes again in the individual event, his American husband, screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, their son, and Tom's mother will be cheering him on from a COVID-induced distance.
We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers. We are the champions.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
news. Ain't that good news?
Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out?
We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show.
All you have to do to receive Inside This Way Out messages is email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will.
Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
Those passages have been known as the clobber passages, unfortunately, which gives a pretty good indicator of how these verses have been used against LGBT people.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the Styrian sky.
Last time on This Way Out, Australian former Pentecostal preacher Anthony Venn Brown clobbered those clobber passages as one part of a multi-faith webinar hosted by his organization, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. Our Sydney correspondent, Barry McKay, brings us more excerpts from the event.
Following on from Anthony Venn Brown's exploration of texts in the Christian Bible used to refer to LGBTQ people in the webinar, Jewish bar mitzvah teacher and radical fairy Kim Gottlieb looks at passages in the Jewish Tanakh which have been assumed relevant to LGBTQ people.
I've just been up with the radical fairies. And so I've lost my voice a little bit. I'm very grateful, you know, to be part of such an important thing, both in terms of us all exploring our own sense of the sacred text and also being in relationship with the other Abrahamic faith traditions. I think the conversations across diversity are very rich and have never been more important. I don't know if people are aware, but the Tanakh is made up of the Torah, the Nevi'im, the prophets, and the Ketuvim, which is other writings. But we also have a whole body of knowledge in the Talmud and the Mishnah, which are interpretations of that, and also the Pirkei Avot, which is the ethics of the ancestors. They provide a much richer conversation. In fact, the Talmud is full of conversation between different rabbis, and the wonderful thing about it is that they're often from different generations and they don't agree with each other. But in the Ethics of the Fathers, Rabbi Ben Bagbag, it says, turn it over, for everything is in it. And I think we are in the process of turning it over and turning it over. I think we must continue to turn it over until everything is in it, which includes making space for the diversity of sexual identity and sexual expression. And obviously, this is going to expand over time. Everybody, of course, goes to Leviticus for the homosexual injunctions. And certainly, a man shouldn't lie with a woman as with a man is the line. In the very Orthodox, they would sit shiva for a child that was a male that was gay, which is a process of that you do for someone who's died. And that's pretty intense. But that's on the really dark side of it. On the other side of it, we have a line in the Pirkei Avot also that says, anyone who saves a life is as if he saved an entire world. And that is a line that is used to encourage us that, as Anthony was saying, where some people are pushed to suicide, it gives us a reason to overturn any other thing. If you can save a life, you're allowed to overturn any law in the Torah, in the Jewish teachings, if it will save a life. And so we get an escape clause, which can be applied, which is a little breathing space for some of these more harsh things. But I guess I want to focus more on the more progressive ways of interpreting text. And we have Rabbi Steve Greenberg, who was ordained as a rabbi before he came out as gay. And so he was able to maintain his Orthodox rabbinic smicha or ordination. And he wrote a important book, Wrestling with God and Man, Homosexuality in the Jewish Tradition, in which he says, I don't presume to understand God's ways or God's final judgment. You build a life, you live it, and you trust that a just and loving God will receive you. Only a fool isn't prepared to be surprised when confronting the Almighty. Another important person is Jay Michelson, who's done a lot of work in this area. And the tendency is to move from the homosexual injunction, which is in chapter 18 of Leviticus, to chapter 19 in Leviticus, which says, Va'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. And it's like, in a way, it's a very good corollary and a good counterpoint to that original suggestion that has been used so vehemently. And in fact, that whole section in Leviticus is really talking about sort of a moral code. And I think the issue of what is moral is the bigger issue rather than the specific places where people like to get very particular. The Hebrew of the injunction is a toiva, and it's like this particular toiva is considered absolutely terrible. Jewish people that I talk to will say, oh, it's in the Bible that it's not okay. And I go, well, it's only saying that it's a toiva, and actually there are 14 different things which are toiva, including eating shellfish. There's also the issue of idolatry or prostitution or adultery and incest and temple prostitution, cross-dressing are all seen in a similar light. The other thing that I think is fantastic in terms of the history is here we are in a time where we feel we're really stepping forward in terms of addressing gender diversity. But in the Talmud, there are actually six genders. The Zachar is the one that's related to the male. The Nekiva is related to the female. But then there's the Androgynos, which is someone who has both male and female. The Tumtum, that is someone whose gender is indeterminate. And then a Elonit, which is a female that doesn't develop at puberty, who could well be intersex. And the Saris, which is men that didn't develop in relation to their gender at puberty. So way back in Talmud times, which is like, you know, 2000 years ago, there was a written version of the diversity that isn't really reflected in our very patriarchal and gender binary expression of religion. More currently, we have Svara, which is a multidisciplined radical yeshiva. Yeshiva is traditionally a place where we study Jewish text and develop a stronger sense of connection with the tradition. And so this is one that is completely queer and has people exploring all sorts of perspectives on the sacred texts and finding our place within that. And I think an offshoot from that that I find fascinating is a group of people who are looking at reinterpreting Torah, because Torah is obviously full of primarily men. There are a few women in it. Most of them don't get to say anything. And so they have said, well, we want a feminine voice. So we're going to explore turning it upside down in the spirit of turn it over and turn it over. Let's turn it upside down. Let's make all the male characters female and all the female characters male. And the fabulous thing about that is that, you know, that fundamental creative myth becomes one in which man is born out of woman rather than woman being born out of at the man's side. And of course, that actually makes more sense on the ground. And so it's wonderful to see the creativity that is present within, at least within these Jewish contexts, that is making room for things to move forward. We have a very vibrant, diverse, progressive perspective both here and in America, where actually it's the strongest sect of Judaism. But here we continue to have relatively strong narratives against gay culture within Orthodox communities, and it's an area that I have an interest in moving forward in. Under the line, there's a lot of rabbis who are quite accepting, and I'm aware of gay people who are quite engaged and involved in their Orthodox communities, but that isn't really unfolding into a particular welcoming or an actively accepting narrative that one would hope for. So we've come a long way and we've got a long way to go. The Rabbi Michael Copeland expressed the notion of creative reinvention. And I think that is the way forward, is for us to develop a culture of creative reinvention that speaks to our values. I'm very interested in cosmology. And I think, you know, a lot of these texts were written when they thought that the earth was the center of the world and, they didn't understand the moon or the planets. And as soon as you get a different context, it changes all your belief structures. And I think it is relatively foolish to stay with very fixed ideas from very different times when our whole understanding of the truth of existence is always growing and our relationship with fixed texts should grow with them.
You can find further in-depth explanations of these webinar talks at abbi.org.au/audio-resources. The entire webinar can be accessed through the Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International website at abbi.org.au, where there is additional discussion and further questions answered by the three interfaith webinar participants. Just search for Christian, Jewish, and Islamic sacred texts and LGBT under latest news on the homepage. Next time we will hear from South African-based gay imam Mushin Hendricks on texts in the Quran referring to LGBTQ people.
When we look at the issue of homosexuality in Islam, it is important that we look at all the sources that the classical scholars have taken the information from and formulated their judgments around.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and Melanie Keller, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Barry McKay. Anita Bryant, Queen, Norman Greenbaum, and the Klismatics performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, donors David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WERU Bangor, Maine, 2NCR South Lismore, New South Wales, KTAL Las Cruces, New Mexico, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.